Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:10 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is May 2nd, and stock markets today were off their lows by the time the market closed, but there's still the potential here for some additional consolidation in the region of the peak. I've been giving a lot of consideration to exactly where are we in terms of the cycle, and I think there are some rather important charts that are worthy of our consideration. I'll just pull these up for you right now. Well, the first is that when we overlay the S&P 500 with the Fed funds rate, we're given some rather good information. For example, we can see that when the Federal Reserve pauses in terms of their interest rate policy, the market can continue to either go sideways or rally. And that was certainly the case back in when the yield curve became inverted back in 2006. The Federal Reserve stopped raising interest rates and the market went on a tear. It wasn't until they started to cut interest rates that the market started to deteriorate. That was very similar to the kind of condition that we saw in 2001. Yes, certainly the market had been pulling back ahead of the decline that we saw in the latter half of 2000 and through to 2001 and 3, but it wasn't really until the Federal Reserve started cutting interest rates that people really concluded that there was a recession unfolding. And I suspect that we are in a very similar situation right now. So there are a lot of people starting to consider whether there is the potential for a breakout on this occasion, because we saw something like that back in 2006 and 7. We didn't quite see it in 2000, but of course the market had been rallying spectacularly ahead of that move. The fact that the market has been going sideways for the last year and more potentially sets up the stock market for an additional upward break. And the bigger question then is what's going to fuel that upward break? So I've went back and I started looking at some of the measures that I'd created over the course of the last 5 years. The first of those is the total assets of central banks. And what's interesting about this is it contracted for just about all of 2018. And from the peak that it put in March, we had a steady contraction all year, and that eventually translated into the stock markets where we had a very significant deterioration in the fourth quarter. It really popped significantly on the upside at the beginning of this year, but it's been contracting again for all of the period between the end of January and now, and it's right back on its lows. So, considering that it was a headwind to asset prices last year, why hasn't it become a headwind to asset prices this year, particularly since we've had this very impressive rally at exactly the same time that central bank balance sheets have been contracting? It's also worth considering that central bank balance sheets have been contracting for two reasons. One is the continued efforts by the Federal Reserve to shave the size of their balance sheet, and then it's also the strength of the dollar. But there is an additional source of liquidity that has become apparent over the course of the last 12 months, and that's deficit spending. The USA might be reducing the size of their balance sheet, but they are also engaged in massive fiscal stimulus through the deficit of the federal government. And that's a significant factor because it's a very significant quantity of money. Well, when we look at the total deficits that are being run by the various central banks, this is a measure I created over a couple of hours this morning. And I do need to, it really does depend on how one looks at it. So I'm going to put this up on a weekly basis. But what we're presented with, hold on, this is bad typing on my half. So let me simply put this back up again. When we look at this price chart, not over just the last couple of months, but over the last few years, well, what we're presented with is a very clear message. And I do apologize for how long it's taken me to get this chart to come up. Well, we only have data that goes back to 1999, and part of the reason for that is Bloomberg didn't have the data prior to that. One of the other points, of course, is that not every country reports their fiscal deficits at the same time, so we do tend to get a jerky measure. But what we can clearly see are two big things. The first is that there's been a very large range, and that has been above the previous range. Then we also, and I've had to fiddle around with the size of this scale here, but right now we're looking at approximately an $800 billion deficit on the global basis, and that has expanded from 200 billion when we were looking at it just 11 months ago. And really, just since September of last year, it has done the majority of that move. So even though central bank balance sheets have contracted by 600 billion, deficit spending has picked up by 400 billion. So in fact, we've really only had 200 billion of tightening. And that is, I think, one of the rationale behind the fact that stock markets have been reasonably immune to the contraction in central bank balance sheets. There is, of course, also the fact that the stock market is pricing in the end of the Federal Reserve's pace of reducing the size of its balance sheet. That's going to be also going to have a very significant effect on the dollar. Now, the dollar extended its rebound in here today. So that is a reflection of the fact that they are going to be reducing the size of the balance sheet through until September. After that, then the size of the Fed's balance sheet will start to expand again, just through normal central banking activities. That's likely to act as a headwind to the dollar. If we do get the dollar starting to underperform global currencies, that's going to represent a significant source of additional liquidity for those markets, both in terms of the quantity of stimulus that is being extended through the fiscal and monetary measures. So what happens in terms of the US dollar for international markets is most, I think, one of the more important points. It's still trending higher. As long as it's trending higher, then it's likely that Wall Street is going to remain an outperformer. When the dollar does turn, then that's going to represent a much more bullish argument for investing overseas. The euro, if we just switch that around, it does look like it is still trending downwards. Well, the downward trend that we're continuing to see on the euro, it should be net positive for European stock markets, but they are also susceptible to some consolidation in here. That's also one of the reasons why I think that we're probably due consolidation, but probably not a great deal more than that. There is an additional point, and it is when we think about the $800 billion deficit that central banks are, excuse me, that governments are running all over the world, well, China represents the vast majority of that. And when we just simply look at China's deficit, then it was last updated at the end of last year, but it was $552 billion. So that's a very significant fiscal deficit, and it also really helps to ram home the point that when we're thinking about the sources of liquidity, there are three big ones. The first is the size of the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, the size of China's deficit, and how much stimulus they are pumping into the economy through fiscal means, and then the strength of the dollar. Those are the three big arbiters in terms of global liquidity. Well, when we then think about that in terms of the bond markets, well, 10-year treasury prices have failed to sustain the rally yesterday and pulled back in here today. It looks at least likely that they're going to come back down and test the lows from the middle of April. But this is so far a consolidation, and as long as it is holding the low from September, that we can continue to conclude that. I do think there is also scope for a further reversion back down towards the mean. By the time it gets towards that 122 area, I think there is a, or at least 122 and a half, there's a good chance that that's where the or that the 200-day moving average would approximate that level. One of the most consistent trends over the course of the last 4 months has been oil prices, but this is the biggest reaction we've seen in at least 4 months. It's now more than $5. It needs to bounce and bounce from the $70 area quickly if this is going to remain a reasonably consistent advance. So it really is do or die here for the oil price. If it can't bounce from here, then we are in for a much more volatile period of trading. Copper prices pulled back very sharply yesterday, and we're also in negative territory in here today, but not in nearly as dynamic a manner. This is the upper side of the underlying range, but it has broken downwards from that now overhead trading range. It's right in the region of the trend mean, but below it. So it's going to have to bounce and bounce in a dynamic manner in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Well, the fact is that the stock market does look likely to consolidate. Part of the reason for that is because the market had been pricing in that the Fed would stop reducing the size of their balance sheet imminently. That has not occurred, and now the investors are concluding that in order to get additional assistance, prices are going to have to be lower. Well, that is starting to filter through into the outlook for the industrial sector, and obviously that is contributing to copper's decline. Then, of course, there is additional supply lining up from new copper mines around the world, so that is an additional headwind. It's going to have to bounce and bounce in an impressive manner to really redeem itself after yesterday's big downward dynamic. Well, China is the mainland Chinese market is still closed, but Hong Kong was open in here today. Japan is still closed for Golden Week. The H shares index has firmed from around this 11,500 level, and that is the upper side of the underlying range. There's still some overextension relative to the trend mean, but within the context of this decade-long range, I do think that there is scope for additional upside in here. Then, when we look at India, we've had some really quite profound volatility in Yes Bank, and it pulled back really very violently yesterday, but it is now starting to demonstrate some support. Yes Bank has been singled out for opprobrium from the RBI. They have a new the CEO, and the CEO has front-loaded a lot of the balance sheet adjustments into this quarter, and that's been represented by this big decline. But India's banking sector is one of the highest growth markets for banking internationally. And when we look at the Bombay Banks Index, then we're presented with a banking index that was not so recently at new all-time highs. This is another market where there is certainly scope for some consolidation, but probably not a great deal more than that. But the relative strength argument is, I think, much more compelling, that India's banking sector is just about the only banking sector in the world that has been able to push on to new high ground. If we then zoom back out and look at, for example, the European banking sector, well, it was unchanged in here today, but there has been an upward bias to trading over the last 4 months, and it is above the trend mean. So it needs to hold this 100-point level. there's certainly some psychological significance to the 100-point level. If it can sustain a move above it and continue to hold the sequence of higher reaction lows, well, then we can continue to conclude that this is a recovery scenario, at least back up towards the upper side of the evolving base formation, which is 50% above where prices are right now. I do think that there is scope for Europe to surprise on the upside, for the simple reason that expectations are so incredibly negative that it's not going to be all that difficult to beat them. The bigger question is whether the German economy is going to continue to do better. It has got some very significant headwinds, both from the slowdown that was present in the automotive sector in China. Also from the increasing regulation on the automotive sector everywhere. And then you also have the fact that the European economy is only just starting to do better. Well, the DAX has sustained a move back above its trend mean. It is susceptible to some additional consolidation, but it certainly has scope to do better from these levels over the next few months. And I think that is by far the most important characteristic in here. When we think about the precious metal sector, well, the continued strength of the dollar is a headwind, and the fact that central bankers are still contracting the monetary base is a headwind also for gold prices. But of course, we know that that is going to come to an end. And when that occurs, then that's likely to turn into a bullish catalyst for the gold price. So I think that's a rather significant factor. The fact is that gold is still in the region of the trend mean. It needs to find support in this area, and if it can do that, well, then there is still a fighting chance that we're going to push back up towards the 1400-point level in the not too distant future. If it fails at this level, well, then I think there is also an increasing potential that it is going to go right back down and test the lower side of its range, which is below $1,200. And I think it's almost a 50-50 bet at this stage which way the market is going to move. But the fact that the dollar remains really quite firm is something that gold has to contend with. When we look at palladium, it had the clearest evidence of acceleration. It has pulled back in a pretty violent manner. It has at least paused over the course of the last month. That is unwinding the oversold condition, excuse me, overbought condition relative to the trend mean. But it's going to have to hold that region around the $1,300 area if we're going to have to continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. When it comes to an additional consideration for the wider market, buybacks have been one of the most clearly animating factors behind asset price appreciation over the course of the last decade. And as if the big pullback at the beginning of 2018 for MMM or 3M wasn't enough, today they announced that they're going to be cutting the number of shares they're buying back to about $1 billion relative to approximately four, which they had done last year. Well, that's a rather significant quantity, and what it is in fact removing is a very significant tailwind for the price. So, this does not look like a bullish chart, and there have been significant periods of inconsistency in the course of the uptrend from 50 to 250, but it's going to have to bounce soon in order to really demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The fact of the matter is that markets have become so conditioned to expect additional buybacks that when they don't get them, or when buybacks get curtailed, then they're being treated like dividend cuts. So MMM is, or excuse me, 3M, I don't know why I keep saying MMM, is a dividend aristocrat, and it is continuing to maintain its dividend growth profile. But that is largely irrelevant to investors who have been betting on continued support for the price in terms of buybacks. So that's a rather significant factor. When we think then, and also contrast it with the kind of measures that GE have had to introduce, then I think we're getting a bit of an idea as to exactly what kind of challenges some of these big companies that haven't been investing in new products for a long time are contending with. GE is on a recovery trajectory, but it's a fraction of the company that it was previously, not least because it sold off some of the crown jewels in order to maintain its investment grade designation. When we think about the fallen angel sector, well, there is the strong likelihood that in order to maintain their investment grade levels, then companies are going to sell some of their assets, or they're going to have massive cost-cutting measures, or they're going to stop buying shares. Those are the potential outcomes that companies will engage in order to maintain their investment grade status. I think that's a picture of what we can probably anticipate from when we do start to see liquidity starting to really tighten up again at a later point. I think against all that background, it's worth considering that the Federal Reserve has paused. There is still potential for additional upside. It's usually when we start to see that liquidity tighten later, that's when these kinds of issues start to really come to the fore. But the weakness in the industrial sector is not a particularly bullish phenomenon, and it is suggestive that there is pressure coming to bear on the global economy, that there is the need for additional central bank stimulus, and in the absence of that, then that's going to represent a challenge both for the resources sector and the industrial sector. But the technology sector is not as influenced by these factors, and the Nasdaq does continue to look susceptible to some additional consolidation, but it is really quite firm still. The Philadelphia Semiconductors Index was in positive territory in here today, and so far this has been a relatively similar sized reaction. When we think about both monetary and fiscal stimulus, those are going to be some of the most important points. But the continued strength of the dollar does suggest that that's a tightening factor in terms of appetites for just about everything outside the USA. And as long as that remains the case, then we're probably in for a little bit of additional choppy action. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.